Save big on all your back-to-school needs, all in the Kroger app. Get three-pound packages of flavorful 80% lean ground beef for $3.99 a pound with your card. Then get Oreo cookies, Chips Ahoy, or Kool-Aid jammers for $1.99 each with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello and welcome to the MMQB NFL Podcast. I'm Connor Orr and it is the 4th of July, so I'm not working very hard this week. And we got Mitch Goldish in the studio, which is very fun. Hello, Mitch.
Hello, Connor. It is Monday. Still got a couple of files we're expecting you to send in this week. Hope you're not on vacation quite yet, but good to see you. Nice to know where what your mental state is like as we begin this week here on Monday morning.
For those of you who are probably just realizing now that Albert is not on the show, after the debate last week, he decided to leave the industry. He is now in commercial real estate after I just completely trounced him. Just kidding. He's on a very well-deserved vacation, and we hope he's ready and rested to go, because when he gets back, Mitch, it's going to be football season. So
burying the lead, are you declaring victory in the debate? I did not see what the poll numbers looked like or how they moved after your performance against Albert. And by the way, I encourage everyone to check out last week's show if you didn't.
It was funny because we did the debate show joking about, oh, hey, this is like a very there's a real debate on the next day, and so we'll do like a silly debate. The actual debate ended up being quite silly, and so, you know, we're all just sort of fitting into the same zeitgeist at this point, so it's nice, you know. But yes, I don't think there's any question I won. Yeah, you were the moderator. You can't say that, but I know I can see it with your eyes.
I'm impartial. I would never dare say who won. But also, Albert's on vacation and he's not going to listen to this, so I could say whatever I want today. He'll never know.
We're talking 100 bold predictions, which is the file that I wrote last week. And Mitch has a few questionable things that he wants to ask me about. Funny story about 100 bold predictions. So we used to do this 100 days out before the season. And I think this year it ran like 78 days out before the season. But it's just a fun way to explore. Look at what we think is going to happen during the season, but you stick in a couple silly ones, right? And a lot of people that I talk to who read it, they look forward to the silly things. And then there are people who don't know what it is and they take it very seriously. And so I got a text last week. A friend of mine was on vacation down in Key West and they were at a bar. And Fox Sports One is arguing about one of the bold predictions. And it was like number whatever, 64, Joe Burrow is going to win MVP. And like 20 predictions later, I predicted that your parents' house cat was going to die. And so I always I wondered if the producers during the morning meeting were like, yeah, this Connor Orr, he thinks Joe Burrow is going to win MVP. We should debate about that. And then but in the back of his head, he's like, he also predicted that a cat was going to die in the same file. And do we take him seriously? Do we not take him seriously? So I very much enjoyed the little, there's layers to this, you know?
Yeah, it's always fun when you get aggregated, especially because like you said, I think you do a very good job on this, and I think this is the third summer in a row you've done this, and I've been your editor on it. I like that you mix in, you talk about the big players. I mean, your first prediction is always who's going to reach the Super Bowl and who's going to win it, and of course, we're not going to tell you on this podcast because people are going to have to click and find out or wait for our season preview predictions in September, but you hit on all the big stuff and big awards, and then you also hit on just tons of is it mean to call Jake Bobo and Kobe Turner random players? Rashad Penny, Riley Dixon, Drew Locke. I mean, you really run the gamut. And so then the funny thing about you being on TV is who cares if you think Joe Burrow is going to win MVP? No offense to you and your predictions. But lots of people are making claims right now about MVP. And there's zero reason for Fox Sports to be debating Connor Orr's MVP pick, except that it just is packaged in this big thing that it just gets more attention when you put out 100 predictions and some of them are kind of ridiculous. And so it would have been interesting. I think there were more interesting things to debate, and we will bring some of those up today. That's sort of why I'm here, to have you, I don't know if it's defend some of your questionable or interesting ones, maybe just explain them and talk about your thought process. But it's just very funny Imagine if this post didn't come out, if you just tweeted or wrote a post like, I think Joe Burrow is going to win MVP. There's no world where Fox Sports is debating that.
No. And that's what's very funny. Like, I would like they've debated my stuff before. And I love, like, Nick Wright is one of my favorite people in television. I think he does a phenomenal job. But I wonder if in the back of his head, he is thinking the same thing that he just said. It's like, why do we care what this person thinks? Like,
right, like, why don't they talk about who Nick Wright thinks is going to win MVP instead of who Connor Orr thinks is going to win MVP? Because I guess they're just entering the conversation in a roundabout way.
Sure, yeah. And, you know, like, in the back of his head, he's like, you know, 2 years ago, he predicted, like, someone was going to get food poisoning and get violently ill, which I think kind of happened, right? The food poisoning one ended up coming true to some degree. Like, someone got some sort of, like, stomach ailment that I did predict. And then I tried to move away from bodily harm and injuries because I don't think that's a fun thing to put onto someone.
Yeah.
You know?
If you throw enough darts, you'll be right eventually.
Yes. And that's really what it's all about, right? When you do 100 predictions, you talk really loudly and intelligently about the ones that you got right. And you just bury the ones that you got wrong so deep. I actually had to... I had to defend. I was talking to some football folks over the last couple weeks, which we do all the time. But I was at like a gathering of some football folks, and we were speaking about stuff. And someone said, "I got your 100 predictions pulled up here, Connor. You know, do you have anything that you want to talk to me about before I dive in here?" And I did have to defend some of them live. It's not fun when the person reading it is tangentially impacted. I don't really like that, but I do have to say I'm probably the only person that like Stephen A. Smith doesn't have to just like walk up to James Harden in the face and be like, I don't think you're very good at this. You know, I have to walk up to someone and be like, I don't think you guys are gonna make the playoffs. Here's why.
I was gonna ask, was Daniel Jones the person you were talking to about your prediction that Drew Locke might be the Giants quarterback of the future or of the near term future?
But it's funny that you mentioned that. So all summer, like I have these weird gut feeling ones, and they've almost always been wrong universally, right? And I've said that every time I've talked about Daniel Jones and Drew Locke, I've said, this is a gut feeling. I have no inside information on this, but I thought that Drew Locke was going to beat out Daniel Jones. And like all I've heard since that has come out, like a Giants fan website aggregated it and was like, well, Sports Illustrated's Connor Orr thinks this and he used to cover the Giants. And so let's look into this. And I was like, really? I've qualified it as best I can. Every single person that I've talked to since that prediction has come out is like, Daniel Jones is crushing it this offseason. He's having like the offseason of his life. He's super determined, like back against the wall, like he's going to carve people up this year. And so, you know, maybe it won't come to be. But
playing the long game, though. You'll be the only person who predicted this heading into the season.
Yes.
All right. Well, that is not one of the ones that I was going to bring up. So should I hit you with, and I like that I did not prepare you for this. So we've got, I have the list pulled up. We have the whole list. Of course, you have it in your mind. Let's talk. And I'm going to say some of these that I'm going to bring up are ones that I actually find interesting or maybe agree with you on. I think you and I agree on a lot of things a lot of the time, especially some of our some of the sort of outlandish things. I think you and I are often kindred spirits there. And that's why it's sometimes fun to try to hop inside your brain when I'm editing some of your columns and things. So I'm not necessarily bringing up like to debate you. These are ones that I want to talk about. And the first one I'm going to bring up, and maybe you know where I'm going with this, is something you and I have been talking about together for many years, and I sort of teased you that you've predicted this in some fashion several years in a row. But number 10 on this list, you said that Justin Fields will score 5 touchdowns as a non-quarterback, basically meaning not just the Steelers running him out on the field when they pull Russell Wilson off, the way we've seen some quarterbacks do with their sub packages, but actually Justin Fields and Russell Wilson on the field together in some interesting packages to get him the ball, or not necessarily on the field together, but possibly Justin Fields as a kickoff returner, which I don't think you mentioned specifically. But you've been talking about this for years, the idea of a team finally committing to the dual QB system in a way we haven't seen before. So tell me your thoughts on the Steelers doing this with Justin Fields to a great degree of success here in your mind.
So this goes all the way back to when I used to work at NFL Network. I live in New Jersey, so I would go down to Princeton. And Princeton has been running different versions of 2-quarterback systems or even 3-quarterback systems for more than a decade now. Their head coach is brilliant. It's a lot of really good offensive coordinators have come from that room before. And, you know, you talk to their head coach and he's like, listen, Like you take a college baseball team, for example, what are they going to get if you're recruiting the best players in the country? A lot of shortstops. And then you got to teach some of these kids, because the best player on every team is a shortstop, right? What do I get? I get a lot of quarterbacks, right? Because Princeton is an Ivy League school. It takes a very high amount of intelligence to play the position, you know, whatever, whatever. And so he's like, I get a lot of quarterbacks. And so I don't want to turn down good people. And so, yeah, I'm going to have a quarterback in the shotgun. I'm going to have a quarterback lined up at running back, and I'm going to have a quarterback lined up at slot receiver. And I'm going to do kind of what the Ravens do, right? A little triple option look. And then if I hand the ball off, that guy still has a throwing option. And, you know, he's done different versions of that, where one year he had a drop back, pure drop back quarterback, and then more of a Tebow guy. So he did drop back quarterback from the zero to, or no, I'm sorry, Tebow guy from the zero to the 20, then drop back guy from the 20 to the 20, and then Tebow guy from the 20 to the goal line. So they both had their areas of expertise. And so it worked, and it can work. And I all these old NFL axioms about, well, you need it to be this way, I don't think are true. And you have all these great athletes with all this various talent. I mean, how many touchdowns has Julian Edelman thrown for the Patriots over the years? You can't convince me that you shouldn't make that a regular part of your offense. You know, you're just forcing the defense to react to more different things.
So, sorry, can I just ask you to clarify here, because you were talking about having different quarterbacks on the field based, yes, on your field position, but am I reading this wrong? Are you saying like Fields and Wilson on the,
yes,
field together, yeah, or you're, because I know we've also talked about, like, I remember there was one year, it was like the first week, because I pulled up the old tweet and I sent you predicted this a few years ago, and then the Raiders like brought in Marcus Mariota on a 3rd-and-1 or 4th-and-1 on like the first drive of the season, like on a primetime game. And yeah, I was like, oh, Connor's nailing it already. But are you actually imagining, like, you think they're going to be scheming up plays for both of them? Or you just think like packages and bringing Fields in, or finding ways to use him in space? Like, what do you envision happening here for,
I think,
for this prediction to come true?
Okay. So picture like third and six, right? From like the opponent's 45-yard line, Russell Wilson in the shotgun, it would have to be Russell Wilson in the shotgun, Justin Fields lined up like a running back next to him, mm-hmm, you know? And then you can do zone read action and think about how many more people in that intermediate area now have to be aware and focused and hesitant about what's going on. Is Justin Fields going to get the ball and run? Okay, Justin Fields is back there. I got to devote more people to coverage. There's more people back. What if Justin Fields just takes the ball and runs, which he's very capable of doing? Now the box is soft. What if Justin Fields takes the ball and now declares he's going to throw the ball? You have guys committing to the run. Now there's an area, you know? And what if Russell Wilson pulls it? And Russell can't throw the ball to the middle of the field, but you know, maybe he'll throw it somewhere else, you know? But that's what I'm thinking about, right? Or Justin Fields lined up as a slot receiver and you fake a jet sweep, or you give it to him on a jet sweep, and now he has that throwing option if he's still behind the line. I think, like, I can't believe we're not doing this yet. Like, I can't believe we're not there. And I feel like once teams get there, It just makes all the sense in the world. Like, when the Eagles drafted Jalen Hurts, that was the initial explanation, which I love, right? I think it was Mike Garofolo, who's a great friend and, like, I think one of the great true insiders in the NFL, but he had that tidbit first. He was like, they think he's kind of Taysom Hill, you know? And, you know, really, what's the best advantage about Taysom Hill outside of the fact that he can ram the ball down your throat is he can be on the field at the same time as a quarterback, and he can also throw the football, you know?
Yeah, I would love it. Five touchdowns feels like a lot, because and you wonder, well, now I have multiple tangents. I want to take this in. Just the NFL being a copycat league, I'm now thinking about like that Dolphins game when the Wildcat first came in.
Right.
And it's like, if they're going to get five touchdowns, what if they make it like truly a red zone package and they just hit it like four times in one game? But now I'm thinking, remember, we've talked plenty about how the Steelers' schedule is backloaded in a crazy way. All their division games are backloaded. And so they're going to play all those teams late in the season. And what if they are playing the same division opponent twice in 4 weeks? And if they can save this all year and save it for that second game when the other team hasn't seen it and hasn't prepared for it, you'd have to bank on both quarterbacks being healthy the entire season if you're going to like put that in training camp or have it prepped and ready to go and then save it 15 weeks. But that would be very, very fun as like a great storyline down the stretch heading into the playoffs.
The big cautionary tale here would be, I mean, the Jets used to have the Tebow cat formation and, when I was covering the team during training camp, they had it blocked off, right? So the players would stand in a way that no one could see it because the Tebow cat was supposed to be so mysterious. And then it ended up just being exactly what you thought it was, like the worst version of the Wildcat possible with just Tim Tebow in there at quarterback, you know, and it wasn't creative. So with Pittsburgh, right, it's dicey because training camp is open to the public. And so you're going to have to put this in and you're going to have Justin Fields at running back or slot receiver and not have a beat reporter tweeting about it. And I would argue that Pittsburgh has some of the best people covering that team in the country. These people know their football. So be very curious to see what's going on there.
All right, let's move on to a prediction I disagree. I do not think this will come true this year, but I'm interested in it as a concept. And you may be right that someday it's coming. And this is one you wrote an entire column about this and then stuck it into your predictions as number 15. But you think that load management is coming to the NFL, and you've said this specifically pertaining to the Jets now a couple times. So give me your elevator pitch for load management in the NFL starting this season.
Well, it's funny. So that's another one that I had to defend in person recently. And one of the people who read it was like, yeah, we got to win games, buddy. And I was like, well, but, you know, and the person just kept saying, yeah, no, we got to win games. So the players have to play. And that's it. Like, end of conversation. But if we're talking about extending, like right now we're at 17 games, right? But just ridiculous on the schedule front, where a lot of these teams get hammered in stretches, where, okay, like, and I get it. I get the, you know, you have to win. But if you're like Kansas City, for example, and you have, like, when New England started winning a lot of games, Tom Brady, what was it? Bill Belichick would put Tom Brady on the injury report every week. You know, there started to become that cutesy sort of manipulation, this idea that, like, we're going to take this less seriously and then perhaps set up the idea that we can pull an okey-doke if we need to. I mean, if the Chiefs are two or three games ahead in December, and now it's a 17-game season, going on an 18-game season, eventually going on to a 20-game season, why wouldn't you just sit Mahomes for, like, 2 or 3 weeks? You know, why wouldn't you sit your left tackle for 2 or 3 weeks? And granted, like, some of this stuff are things you need to do, but even a one game rest in the middle of the season for some of these guys, like, and I guess you can't do it for key positions, but some of, like, you know, a veteran wide receiver, a veteran running back, maybe even your quarterback, if you've got a rookie, if you've got like a Drake May, Jacoby Brissett situation going on, just that 1 week, I think just like an additional bye, like you're trying to build in rest periods for these guys, because the NFL clearly doesn't care. If you look at the net rest differential on this year's schedule, it's like criminal what they're doing to these players.
Yeah, and you're saying about the rest, it makes sense to do it in primetime games.
Yeah.
Now they've got teams that have multiple Thursday games, and you've got Christmas Wednesday, and I think you have sort of hinted that teams would do it out of spite, like, screw you, NFL, making us play on a Black Friday or play on a Saturday before a Wednesday Christmas. Like, imagine if the Chiefs just sat Patrick Mahomes or some vital player during the Christmas game, which would be what, like, the NBA has dealt with, where they had to put in new rest rules because the team started sitting their star players during all the, you know, the primetime games on, like, TNT Tuesday, Thursday nights. And so that aspect interests me. I don't think that's coming. But it is interesting if, you know, as the season gets longer and they've changed the rules, they used to have every team play on Thursday night once, and now there are teams on multiple times. Like, that is the situation to me where it makes sense if you've got a veteran and you say, we're just not going to play them on Thursday. We're not going to play them twice in, twice in 5 days or whatever the math works out to. And I think it depends on who the opponent is. It depends on the time of year. Like, if it's late in the season, if guys are actually banged up. Because you do see sometimes, like, different players have different availabilities on a Thursday, just depending on, you know, how banged up they are, the wear and tear of the season. If it's a necessary game, if it's close to the playoff race, division game, whatever. So that's the part that interests me. But I don't see the sort of full scale, almost like a revolt. I don't see that happening this season. But you're right, if the season gets longer and if they get even more lax about how often teams can play in the middle of the week, it's a possible glimpse into the future. It's interesting.
I mean, the Jets play three times in 11 days, and I think are the first team in NFL history that are going to do that. Let's say, for example, and they didn't, and here's what I think is interesting, too. They go to San Francisco, week one, Monday Night Football, then short week all the way across the country to the Titans, week two, before a critical divisional matchup, their first Patriots game at home, week three. So they don't go home until week three. They had the Cardinals on, they have the Cardinals on the schedule. I feel like they probably asked, I don't know if this is true or not, but I would assume that they would have asked, hey, give us Arizona week two so we can go to San Francisco. Then we can stay on the West Coast and then we can just scoot down to Arizona into Phoenix, get that game out of the way, and then shove off and get to MetLife for week three. Like, what if you were like, okay, Aaron Rodgers is going to play week one. And then he's going to head back to New Jersey and he's going to rehab for a week. And then, you know, sorry, but you don't get Aaron week two. You know, sorry, CBS. You know, he's a 40-year-old guy coming off torn Achilles. You know, tough noogies. You know, Tyrod Taylor will run a different package for him. I really don't. This is going to be like a insane take that you're going to immediately jump on me and disagree with. But I don't think the drop off between Aaron Rodgers and Tyrod Taylor, the Aaron Rodgers that we don't know right now, the 40-year-old man coming off the torn Achilles, I don't think that the drop-off between that Aaron Rodgers and a fully healthy Tyrod Taylor is such that, like, you're talking about it being the difference in a game against the Titans. That, personally.
Yeah, I know
that sounds crazy. I know how that sounds. I know how it sounds.
No, I was thinking, and so I don't think I ever said this publicly on the record. I don't even know if I brought it up to you, but I had this thought last year. I'm trying to remember the details. I am pretty sure the Panthers played on Thursday Night Football in week two last year. It might have been week three, but I think it was week two. And I remember thinking, like, they named Bryce Young the starter for week one, and it was like, okay, you want him in there. And I remember thinking, like, maybe they should have just announced Andy Dalton was going to start week two, because having your rookie quarterback, his second NFL game, first full week of preparation, like, you have him play his very first game and then he has to all of a sudden do the prep for a Thursday night game. You can't make that announcement after week one, because then everyone's going to panic and think, like, oh my God, they're panicking. They're already benching their quarterback. But if Frank Reich had come out before the season and just said, yeah, we're going to start Bryce Young week one, we're going to start Andy Dalton Thursday night week two, we think it's good for our rookie quarterback, like, I think that would have been a fascinating philosophy shift, and I would have loved to see that. And then they obviously didn't. But Dalton did play a game early in the season. So I think maybe Dalton was in week three. I don't remember exactly. But sort of that idea of, like, if you announce it ahead of time and you prepare for it, you know, that it's a cool thing for teams to think about, even though, like you said, they got to win games and it's riskiest with a quarterback. But again, talking about, like, the drop off, like, Bryce Young in his second week as an NFL player versus Andy Dalton is not a huge drop off, especially when we saw how Bryce Young played last season.
Think about where, like, Major League Baseball is at this point. Like, in Tony La Russa in the 80s, was the first guy to be like, why don't I just throw, like, six pitchers? Like, who cares? Why do we need starting pitchers? And we're getting to that point in Major League Baseball where it's, and we, I think, had the same mythos around a starting pitcher in the 80s in Major League Baseball that we have about a quarterback now, where it's like, well, he's got to be the leader. He's got to be the commander. He's got to do all this. And it's like, does he? Does it really matter? Does it honestly really matter? Or is it harder for defenses, or is it harder for hitters in Major League Baseball to not see the same guy every time they come through the lineup? And is it different for your divisional opponent to have to prepare for two different quarterbacks? Is it different for a defense, you know, going back to the Justin Fields, Russell Wilson thing, where it's like, hey, maybe on some downs I'm seeing Justin Fields. Like, as soon as we let go of the old nonsense, which is just so pervasive, I think we get to the point where we can have some really interesting conversations, because that's all it is. Like, whose idea is it? Andrew Luck talked about this when he retired and did that great story with ESPN, where it was like, I felt like I had to give all of myself. There's this martyrdom that's associated with the position. What if we just drop all that? Like, it doesn't matter. You know, you just have a couple of guys, you know, who cares? You play some of them this week. You don't play some of them this week. You know, Aaron Rodgers can still be Max Scherzer, but you can throw him for four innings. You don't have to have him out there the whole time, you know?
Yeah. I was also interested. The idea of this prediction made me think about David Bakhtiari. Remember last year there was a story where people thought he was like not going to play on turf and only going to play on grass. And I think that came back and he said that's not going to happen. That's another scenario. But I must say, my editor brain kicked in and I had to fact check myself. I definitely remembered the Bryce Young situation wrong. They were on Monday Night Football in week two, so he actually had an extra day to prepare. So that explains why I didn't write about it or say anything about it, because it throws that example out the window. But I still think, as a general idea, like a young quarterback preparing for Thursday night early in the season, like that type of situation is one that's interesting, even though I remembered the details of that that specific one a little bit wrong.
No doubt. Wrong. Yeah. Again, nobody's going to do it. And I think that's the thing. I mean, I pitched it as... I believe in it. But as soon as that prediction went live, you think about it as a balloon floating in the air. It just got shot down by a million poison darts. So it's not going anywhere.
All right. This one maybe will be a quicker one. But number 86, you say multiple track and field, track athletes and rugby sevens players will get tryouts with NFL teams after the Olympics. And I want to know if you're willing to give us a peek behind the curtain. Is this one you just came up with on your own, or have you talked to people about this? Do you know this is a thing that they're looking at doing?
I don't know that, but I think we know how NFL people behave, right? And during training camp, what's going to be center stage in the sporting universe? It's going to be the Olympics. And it's the one year, you know, every 4 years where all of our focus does shift towards the people who are truly the greatest athletes in our country, you know, and in the world. And so I think especially if you have a new kickoff return rule coming and then you see some, you know, rugby sevens guy from New Zealand just juking the pants off of people, or, you know, our 100-meter dash team, like, have you been watching the trials? Are you fired up?
You know, I'm always fired up about the Olympics.
Yes. I mean, I watch the trials every single night. I mean, you can't tell me. You know, I was watching the men's 200-meter final, Noah Lyles and Kung Fu Kenny and all those guys. You can't tell me that there isn't a GM out there that's just saying, gosh, just give me, put a ball in their hands, let me block it all up, and then let me just cut these guys loose on a kickoff return. Like, I don't know, right? It's that your practice squads are bigger now than they have ever had been before. You can stuff one of these guys on there. You know, maybe they're, you know, especially the older guys, right? It's your second Olympics as a sprinter. Maybe you're not going to make it to your third Olympics, or as a rugby player, you're not going to make it to a third Olympics. You know, that's the time. Come over here, you know, learn America's game and score a couple kickoff return touchdowns, you know? Let's go.
Sure, is that more glamorous than the Bills signing a wrestler who's never played a down of football before and turning him into an edge rusher? You like that move too?
Yeah, I mean, Sean McDermott was a wrestler, so I think we all, you know, there was like a penchant for that. And I do feel like, I mean, listen, there is a great untapped market. It's, you know, the Eagles in Jordan Mailata, it's like, look at this guy. And if you have any faith in your coaching whatsoever, you should be able to turn this mountain of a human being into a solid contributor as an offensive tackle if he has the right makeup. There's players like this all over the world. And, you know, Australia is a huge untapped market there. I think there's a lot of people, there's a lot of stuff going on there where you could see a lot of these guys coming over here and dominating, which is good.
All right. I have a few more. Let's see. I'm not going to ask you about Aaron Donald unretiring for the stretch run.
Come on, baby.
Rams win the
NFC West. Looks good, doesn't he?
I want to bring this up. And I actually almost brought this up when you filed the story, and we just let it go. But I'm going to make you guess, actually. Let's play a guessing game. Mm-hmm. I did a control F and searched for one name, and it might be the name that comes up most often in this story. I searched Belichick.
Oh!
Connor, do you have any idea how many times you named Bill Belichick in this post? Don't you dare. I see you typing. Put your hands up where I can see them. Put your hands where I can see them. And can you guess how many times? That's one hand. How many times?
I'm holding the microphone with the other hand.
You named Bill Belichick in this column.
Oh, it's got to be more than 20.
Well, no, it was 14. But that still seems like a lot. You named Bill Belichick 14 times in 7 different predictions. I will run through them very quickly. You in prediction 2 about 7 coach vacancies after the season. In prediction 17 about a coach trade / bat fight after the season. You mentioned him in prediction 30 about the Patriots social media team finally being free to post to their heart's content.
Which is a good prediction and you know is true.
I do know it's true. You mentioned in 47, you just gave a casual mention of Belichick's defense against the Dolphins. In 57, you named some sort of secret society of his former assistant coaches coming together. In 83, you spoke directly about Bill Belichick being linked to some jobs. And then in 85, you gave sort of a passing mention to the Patriots dynasty in a blurb about the Chiefs. So make a case. Bill Belichick, you seem to think he's the most interesting person in the NFL this season. Is that the case?
Yes, but this is another one, Mitch, where I feel like I've gotten some very, I don't want to say helpful feedback. I mean, but listen, I think that I've been forced to confront my own Belichick bias, right? I think he's brilliant. I think he's the greatest head coach of all time. I get a lot of eye rolls from that. Even the post Tom Brady, you know, when Tom Brady won the Super Bowl with Tampa Bay, everyone's like, well, this proves it. I don't necessarily think so. But I do think that, you know, I believe that. I believe that he will get a look next year. I believe that he will coach. I believe that he'll look good on the Manning cast and that people will like him and that they'll want him to coach. But we have to confront the idea, Mitch, that the tough guy head coach thing might just be over. You know what I mean? It really might be. And we wrote about this, actually. You and I worked on a column together when Joe Judge was fired as the head coach of the Giants. And I thought, this is the last time, really, that a new guy can come in and be like, I'm a tough guy. I'm the sheriff in town, right? So Joe Judge was fired. Sean Payton's not performing well in his second time around. You look at, I mean, John Gruden is not back in the NFL. I would assume he gets back at some point as a, maybe like a veteran coordinator somewhere. But, you know, all of these guys are dying out. And, you know, even Bill Parcells at one point, players were like, I don't care about this guy. You know, I don't know this guy. You know, it doesn't matter to me. And so I really do think that, like, the deeper we get into, what, are Gen Z the kids now?
Yes.
The deeper we get into Gen Z, the more they're going to be like, listen, I'm putting my body on the line to come to work, and then you're going to scream about me? You're going to scream at me? Like, I don't think so, you know?
Yeah, I thought you had when you were talking about a column, I thought you were going to bring up the one on the day it was announced Belichick wouldn't be back with the Patriots. You wrote a piece that was basically like, Bill Belichick now lands on a job market in a league that has changed since he was hired. And I thought that was a really good piece. And not just about temperament, but sort of about the all-powerful, coach who you brought up Parcells, but, you know, buys the groceries and cooks the meal, basically, to use his old adage. And I thought that was a good piece, just talking about how the league has changed. But all that said, you think the specter of him being out there, like, you think he'll get a job, or you think he'll just sort of loom over as a potential candidate? I'm sure he'll interview. Maybe I shouldn't say I'm sure, because, you know, who knows? But you think, given all that you just said about how the league has changed, you still think he's going to get a job somewhere in 2025?
It's hard, right? Like, I yes and no. Like, part of me just thinks it's unfathomable that no one else would give him one more opportunity. And that I think he could instantaneously turn around. But the other side of that coin is that an owner has him in there, and it's like, okay, well, who's your staff? And it's like, Josh McDaniels and Matt Patricia. And then the owners are just like, yeah, no, man. Like, we're not doing that anymore. Sorry. That show's been canceled a few times. But I don't know. Like, there's how I see him, and there's how other people see him. And I think I just have to recognize that, you know? Like, I came up through peak Belichick covering the NFL, and you're just saturated with all these stories about his brilliance, and you talk to so many of his former players who, you know, that's the thing that really bugs me, right? Is, you know, after the Tom Brady thing, the switch just flips and it's like, nope, it was Tom Brady, it's not Bill Belichick. But gosh, I remember interviewing like Stephon Gilmore and Kyle Van Noy and all these guys, and then being like, Bill will come to me before the game and he'll tell me exactly what's going to happen, and that's exactly what happens. And he's like, you know, and these players are emphatic about it, to the point where they were, you know, they had the answers to the test before. And so based on that, and the other part of this too is, you know, I talked to other coaches, right? Really good offensive coaches. And I'm like, who do you hate playing against? To a man, it's Bill Belichick. I hate playing against this guy. I don't know what he's going to do. And so that part of me thinks, yeah, he should get another job. But there is the other part of me that's like, you know, he's sort of like a snail out of his shell at this point, right? A turtle out of its shell, where it's like people look at him and they're just like, nah, you know, and owners could look at him that way now, players could look at him that way, and it might not happen. I do think, though, that he is a more recognizable brand name than even Sean Payton was when Sean Payton was on the market, and we thought that Sean Payton was going to dominate the conversation all offseason, right? Belichick's going to be on Manning Cast every week. We're going to be paying attention to and writing about what he says, and there is going to be a really good team that underperforms, and you know that he's going to be the first person that we go to.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and the age, you didn't mention the age, but that's part of it too, especially sure. So many of these teams, they want, you know, the young hot guy off the McVay Shanahan assembly line who they think is going to be on their team for 20 years. And next offseason, if Belichick and Mike Vrabel, who's now an assistant in Cleveland, if they're both interviewing for a job, I think there are going to be a lot of people who would rather have Vrabel, thinking he'd be there longer and stick around through possibly through a rebuild. You know, so it's interesting seeing them as candidates together looming on the job market.
I think Belichick has done a lot this offseason to show us how much youthful vigor he still has left, Mitch.
That's well put. All right. I have like one or two ish more. Yeah. I want to talk about Netflix, and you actually mentioned Netflix twice in this blurb. One is number 78. You talk about Netflix getting into live events and sort of chipping away at the, I think you might have called it the entertainment monolith that is the NFL or something to that effect. And then you also, in 22, you talk about a Tom Brady unretirement rumor around Christmas being attached to one of the four teams playing on Christmas Day, which I'll remind everyone are the Chiefs, Steelers, Ravens, and Texans. But I think you came at that as sort of some nefarious means of like, oh, we have to prop up the ratings for this game, and maybe more people will watch if they think that Tom Brady is going to be quarterbacking the Texans into the playoffs, or one of, I don't want to wish an injury on any of these quarterbacks, but something like that. So I'd like to talk generally about Netflix's welcome to the NFL here, but what was your sort of thinking behind how you sized them up and why they'd be in this type of position?
So here's my thought, right? We have this whole deal now. I think it's brilliant, actually. Michael Johnson, right? Our gold medal track and field sprinter from what? Then I think he was 96, 2000?
Yeah, I think 96 was the year he had the gold shoes.
Yes. Yeah. Or was that 96 or 94?
No, it would have been 96. Summer was 96 Atlanta, 2000 was Sydney.
96. Okay.
Yeah.
Atlanta. Okay. Yeah, yeah. And, you know, he is starting this new thing where I think it's Netflix or one of the big providers where it's like, why are we waiting every 4 years? Why don't we just put $100,000 on the table and have Noah Lyles and the second fastest guy in the world race each other? You know, who cares? Like, let's do it now. And like, hell yeah, that's a great idea, right? I would watch that. I know you would watch it. Yeah. I mean, we used to, I read a book a couple last year called The Perfect Mile, where we talked about Roger Bannister being the first person to, they talked about Roger Bannister being the first person to break the 4 minute mile. But these guys, there was three guys who were vying for it, right? And they were training for it and they were all trying to do it. And they were racing each other like, you know, every couple weeks it'd be like, yeah, let's race them at Madison Square Garden. And then like 100,000 people would show up. It's a good idea. And now 100,000, you know, a lot of people will watch it because and so you have, okay, people would love to see Mike Tyson, a 60-year-old Mike Tyson, beat the piss out of a YouTube celebrity. And so, yeah, let's do that. And so how far away are we from the idea that like, okay, who can throw a football further, Josh Allen or Patrick Mahomes? And we'll build a little, you know, we'll build a little preamble around it. We'll have Adrian Peterson and Le'Veon Bell box each other or whatever those guys are doing now, and then stick both of these guys at midfield and have them whip a football, you know? And you mean to tell me that you wouldn't tune in and watch that? And how far away are we from the point that the NFL, there are most popular American sports celebrities where they're just not picked off one, you know, I mean, we paid to watch Aaron Rodgers and Tom Brady golf one another. We're not going to pay to watch, you know, I don't know.
Well, like, can I bring up a great celebrity? I don't know if you remember this, but well, I know you remember I wrote about a big thing on Devin Hester a few years ago. Do you remember, like, back in his prime, Devin Hester and Chris Johnson raced against a cheetah?
Yes.
It was like on, I think it was for Nat Geo, if I remember that right.
Someone raced a giraffe too, didn't they?
Yeah, that was, man, what, it was like man versus beast or something.
Yeah.
I remember that. I must have been in like middle school or high school when that happened, because I think it might have been was Carl Lewis the announcer? I don't remember exactly, but I remember watching it and they threw it to a color commentator and he said very seriously, he said, "Well, the most important thing here is for the giraffe to know that it's in a race." Like, I've been thinking about that line for like 20 years now because it's perfect. But yeah, I mean, stuff like that, it's like, it's kind of wild they're not already doing it because stuff has happened in the past and then they've gotten away from it. And then you're saying, and with like the quarterback show and the Tom Brady roast was on Netflix and now the Christmas games, they've already sort of started dipping their toe in with just like becoming part of the NFL, you know, entertainment machine, I think we already said.
Yeah, like Netflix in the off season from, and granted these quarterbacks don't have a ton of time, but a lot of them train in warm weather spots. You set up a, you know, you have production studios in Florida and LA, and you know what, you just take the camera over there and you do a live like accuracy competition, like the Pro Bowl. And you do that once a week. You don't think 90,000, 100,000 people would watch that live just because they have nothing else to do?
Connor Orr has a lot of outlandish takes, but the important thing is for him to know that he's on a podcast.
The horse, the giraffe needs to know he's in a race. Do you agree with me on that, though?
I think that is a good idea that could quickly become oversaturated. Like, I'm already out on, there are just too many documentaries. And like so many that they just get sort of, you know, they're like redundant with each other. But there's like now there's like three different versions of Hard Knocks and the teams are doing their own documentaries. And there's quarterback, which this year is going to be wide receiver. And it's just like there's already so much that I think I would tune in the first time. And then unless it was a really compelling player, you know, I don't know that I would tune in again, depending on how often it was.
I used to, I mean, Hard Knocks used to be a big thing, you know, I used to live blog Hard Blocks or Hard Knocks. I mean, I think the last one I did was the Browns when Todd Haley was like sitting upside down in that ab contraption and like Hugh Jackson was trying to have a serious conversation with him and he was like literally upside down in like an ab chair. It was very funny. But after that, it just became, it became too much, you know? In season Hard Knocks, regular season Hard Knocks. And like that, the mystique of that is gone to me. Yeah. Like, we know everything now.
And cause the teams are doing their own things too. Like I remember when football teams started winning Emmy awards, that's when you knew it was over.
Right.
Like I'd have to go back and find it, but I remember seeing a tweet and this must've been like 8 years ago where it was just like the Ravens are proud to announce they've won their 13th Emmy award. And I was just like, the Ravens have 13 Emmys. And wow. It was like, I don't know. But like now every single organization in every space is a content machine. And that's just like a thing that everybody's focused on. And that's our world. But I wanted to bring up Netflix partly because I think this is actually one of the biggest stories that nobody is talking about right now is that Netflix still doesn't have a broadcast partner to put on these games. Because it's like when Amazon Prime started getting the Thursday night games, they needed like another, because they didn't have like the infrastructure in place. And so Netflix is looking for a partner like that. And there was a good, Florio wrote a piece like a month ago where it was like, yeah, they're struggling. They haven't found anyone yet. And I think it's because like ESPN is stretched very thin that time of year with all the bowl games. And like everyone else just views Netflix as a competitor. And it's like, if you're
so why would
Amazon,
you help them?
If you're Fox, if you're CBS, like, why would you help them? And I'm sure they'll probably figure it out, and maybe it'll take Roger Goodell shaking hands and convincing someone to do the league a solid. But if they can't figure this out, this is potentially, like, a real disaster. Because, like, it's not as simple as just giving a different network the Thursday night package. They built the entire NFL schedule around having these four teams play on Christmas, because that determined they're going to play on a Wednesday, which means they have to play on a Saturday the week before, and they've got to be marquee teams. And so these are like three like mega contenders. And then the Steelers, who are like a popular team and could absolutely be good and seem to make the playoffs all the time. And like those four teams are like a little bit screwed by this, but it's like, yeah, whatever, it is what it is. But if they can't find a broadcast partner and Netflix doesn't have the ability to put these games on, then that's like an actual nightmare scenario. And you'd think they want that sorted out before the season actually kicks off.
I would love if they had to do it themselves and then it ended up looking like the PSAC state football quarterfinals of like your high school on the Pocono Mountain Network. And it was like, you know, instead of like Steelers Chiefs, it looked like Berwick Upper Dublin. Like it was just like this hilarious, like totally awful.
And I don't think that will happen, but I think they're like dangerously close to it happening, to the point that like Goodell's gonna have to step in and be like, CBS, like, can you please just give us Andrew Catalan and all of your cameras and let us do this, and like, we will give you more money and promise that we won't do this again. Like they need to get this sorted out. And I think it's an under the radar story that they haven't figured it out yet.
I mean, the NFL literally convinced ESPN to hire Joe Buck and Troy Aikman, and that, like, buying the rights to the NFL must be the most hilarious. I'm trying to think of like the best example. It would be like joining a country club, and then they're like, okay, well, it's $30,000 to join the country club, but then every time you golf, you have to pay another $1,000, and then you also have to spend $18,000 a year at the restaurant. And then if you want your kids to swim in the pool, it's another $3,000. And so that's kind of what being a rights holder in the NFL is, right? You pay us billions of dollars to air these games. And by the way, it has to also look like this. And then you have to give us more money when we want at other times too, you know?
And also, you can't play golf on Tuesday because we gave that day to Netflix. So sorry, yeah. I just want to be very clear. I'm pro Andrew Catalan. First broadcaster to call out an octopus during a live game that he was broadcasting. So we bring up Andrew Catalan, to promote, not to mock. We're fans.
I forgot to give, for those of you who don't know, guys, Mitch invented the octopus. I normally say that at the top of every show that you come to, but I
didn't. Oh, please. Everyone knows I invented
everyone
the
knows
octopus.
Now. Okay. Everyone knows.
All right. Well, I think we have run through my list. Is there anything else before we get out of here that you want to bring up, or anything you're surprised I didn't say? I don't know. Why don't you? You're the host. Why don't you take us home?
I'll close it out with this. I did predict. I did a couple silly predictions. I predicted that someone's cat was going to die. I predicted that Roger Goodell is really a steamy romance novelist. But my favorite, and I'll ask producer Shelby just to get the beep button ready, and then we're going to get out of here, is I think that Tom Brady is going to say the word shits on the air this year. And this happened in a Notre Dame USC game he became the, he used to be the color guy for Notre Dame football, and then he ended up being the USC athletic director. What's his name? It's gonna drive me nuts. He's not the athletic director anymore. He meant to say the quarterback was Carlisle Holiday for Notre Dame, and he meant to say that he was taking a lot of shots and then a lot of hits, but he said shits. And
I thought shifts was the word you were worried would trip up Brady.
No, shots and hits combined into shits. And I remember, like, my dad used to tape all the games, and I must have played that back like 11 times, and I watched it and I was just dying. So I think that'll happen to Tom Brady, but that's all, you know? Right.
Okay. Looking forward to it. Maybe on Christmas when they force him to
Pat
work
Hayden.
The game.
Pat Hayden. Was the former, he was a great color guy, former AD of USC. Yeah, so that was it. I don't know. Did you like all the sillies this year? There were a lot of sillies.
I always love the silly ones. A few had to be edited slightly, but you were mostly within bounds. I had a good time this year. This is a fun read. We barely even scratched the surface. So if it feels like we went through a lot, I still always encourage people to check out what you're writing on the site.
I will say this too. We closed it out, and Mitch, you brought this up at the beginning of the show. Just a little message to everyone going into the 4th of July weekend, friends and family everywhere. My prediction number 100 was you will make someone's life better this football season simply by being yourself. Have a great conversation at a tailgate. Get your friends together for a fantasy football draft. Have a text thread with your neighbors, your high school pals, your coworkers related to your knockout pool. If football is good for one thing, it is good to bring us together and to allow us to relate to people. So have a great holiday weekend. Hug your friends and family. Enjoy all mayo-based salads that aren't really salads. Mitch, I hope you enjoy yours with you and yours. Albert, hope you're having a great time on vacation. And we'll see you guys next week.
Save big on all your back-to-school needs, all in the Kroger app. Get 3-pound packages of flavorful 80% lean ground beef for $3.99 a pound with your card. Then get Oreo cookies, Chips Ahoy, or Kool-Aid jammers for $1.99 each with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.